Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your Carolina Panthers.
Hey, yeah, relax. Yeah, take a deep breath.
Oh yeah, I'm hot.
If you really upset, bomb on me so I can go inside. Okay. You got me?
Yeah.
It's like loose in a tooth.
Yeah.
Okay?
No.
I won't press no charges. You can play the whole season. No, no game suspension, none of that.
All right? Yeah.
I may even give you some money. All right? I just want to make you laugh. Okay?
Cat scratch fever.
Got nothing here, baby.
Cat scratch fever.
I can't quit now. Yeah, I keep my focus, man. I keep my focus. We're going to find out how far we can push ourselves.
Makes. You know, no one's happy about what happened last year, this past season. It was frustrating to deal with, but you got to learn and you got to move on. And, you know, there are some really good things that came out. There really are. Right now, we're excited about the number of players that are working out. We got a bunch of guys downstairs. Disappointed as everybody else is, and they're getting ready. I've spoken to Cam. He's come through a couple times, and he's, you know, just looks good. He's positive enough. He knows where, you know, we got to get better. Signing Mario West and putting the tag on KK is a big piece for us, you know, solidifying that defensive line. The play of those two young Connors, by the time we got to the end of the year, they were legitimate NFL players, and we're very pleased about that. And Luke's back working out like a banshee, and with four picks in the top 98, we got a chance to get four really good players because this is a pretty deep draft. All right.
All right. That was Dave Gettleman's opening statements at the Combine and his presser this past week. He's going to address the elephant in the room right out of the gate. And that is, you know, the Panthers did not have the season they planned. Ain't no damn doubt about that. You know, he tried to spin it as well as he could. So we'll talk about that and the scouting combine. I'll tell you, when I planned this episode, I totally forgot that there would be some free agency activity starting today with the, I guess they call it the legal tampering period, the 2 days before the actual start on March 9th, so they can actually negotiate. Not really heard anything as far as the Panthers reaching out to any actual free agents. They instead are focusing on their own. And they've re-signed four players today. First this morning, I just posted last night that I thought Brenson Burson was on his way out finally, and they turned around and signed him first thing in the morning. Of course, that's the way that works. And they also brought back Colin Jones, another good kind of versatile player. Not a starter, but some depth. But the big news was bringing back C.J. Johnson, old Charles Johnson. He, you know, he was on a one-year prove-it deal last year, and you know, he did for the most part. A little shaky early on in the season, missed some time, but came on down the stretch and just, you know, I love that picture I have in that post there. He's just a bad man, a bad, bad man. And I think he's still got some tread on the tire, so I'm kind of glad when they brought him back. I don't know what that spells for Coney Ealy, because the thought was if that Johnson left, Ealy would step into that spot. He seems to play better on that side, yada, yada, yada. I guess all that will work itself out in training camp. And let's see, also Fozzie Whitaker, brought him back. Good third down utility guy, and in emergency situations can carry the full load. He's just not big enough for an entire season of that. But I think if you need to get 10, 15 carries in a game, he could do it. Do it pretty well. So, I like what he's done so far, but nothing splashy, and I'm hoping for more, some real splash this year, but I don't want to get too far into that because I am here to talk more about the combine. And with that, I believe I got my trusty guy, Durst, out here. What's up, Durst?
Good evening. How you doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. So I'm not a guy that can sit back and watch the combine for hours on end. I watched a little bit on Saturday, a little bit on Sunday, probably maybe an hour total there, but I like the highlights and whatnot, the buzz. What about yourself?
Yeah, a couple of years back, I used to be able to just sit on the couch and watch it for, 4 hours at a time. But nowadays, I'm not even too sure you really have to as much. The probably what I get the most out of it, these websites that are Three Sigma Athletes and these mock draftables, they with the spider graphs that show historical, how this athlete compares historically. I guess you could say that every individual test just by itself is probably a little bit overrated, a 40 time and a bench press. But when you combine them together, and, for those of you that maybe don't know what SPARC is an acronym that stands for speed, power, agility, reaction, and quickness. And evidently it was developed by Nike, and Seattle Seahawks have been using the SPARC testing for years to try to come up with to get the better athlete, the bigger, stronger, faster. And for a long time, the whole Al Davis, just going with the underwear Olympics, hero seemed to be kind of a joke, but now it seems to really, really caught on and I think spread league wide. So I didn't really watch a lot, bits and pieces, but what I've really done is try to kind of study the results. When you can kind of sit down and just look at the different graphs and the different charts that will compare, certain running backs that maybe you had grouped together and maybe try to find some separation between two similar running backs, two similar wide receivers, two similar tight ends, et cetera.
Yep. All right. So I see you put up a risers post, got some, And you mentioned a lot of those stats in there, right? The Three Sigma Athlete thing, starting with this Kevin King guy, cornerback out of Washington. I've seen people mock him to us, I guess because of his size. He might be there at number 40. I think people are mocking him to us like in the third round. I doubt he's going to be there at that point.
Yeah, I do think he's – I hate to just – go too overboard with the combine and say all of a sudden, a fifth rounder is going to be a first rounder. But
yeah,
I think Kevin King really did prove some things there that he had some good film. He had some one-handed interceptions. He was a good player and he's tall. He's like 6'3", 200 pounds with long arms. But I think there was some question about his pure speed. And I've even heard some people saying that he maybe would have to move to safety because there was some question about his pure speed. And this I think, definitely, I think he's sticking at quarterback. And so with my
4.43,
I tried to kind of – 4.43. And he had the top three-cone drill of anybody in the combine.
Wow.
Yeah, of course, the three-cone drill is more of a change of direction. And when you think about somebody that's 6'3" versus say 5'10", the guys that are 5'10", like Jordan Lewis, the cornerback from Michigan, you kind of think he would have had a really good three cone drill, but instead it was Kevin King, a 6'3" guy, who was able to do that. So that's
Yeah.
That's probably even more impressive than the 4.3, because that's straight long speed. You got a long strider that can maybe, get up to top speed quickly, but change the directions for a corner is probably more important test for him.
I would agree with that.
So there's some obvious winners in the combine.
Who else?
Go ahead. Yeah, some obvious winners in the combine, the Myles Garretts and the John Rosses and the O.J. Howards and the guys that maybe were already considered first-round picks or at least top 50 who more or less just solidify what we already thought about them. They're still winners,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that they solidified what, their standing as either the top or the second person at that position. But I tried on my risers kind of take some people that maybe weren't considered universal first-round picks, although I did stick Christian McCaffrey and Deshaun Watson in there because I felt they maybe showed a little bit beyond what people thought they were going to be able to do. But a lot of the second, third, fourth, fifth-round guys is the guys I tried to profile. And
so you got a Panthers sleeper in there?
with every free agent signing, I begin to sort of second guess some things. We're going a little heavy on the defensive ends in free agency, it looks like.
Well, that's a good observation. So far, outside of Charles Johnson, but. Yeah, we tagged KK. Hopefully he'll sign it by the end of the week. And we don't have to worry about another Josh Norman-type event. I sure as hell hope so.
I think Gettleman said something like, that ain't happening this year or something. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, actually, I believe it was KK kind of said that to begin with, and then he kind of walked it back probably after his agent spit his Cheerios out and said, you can't say that you'll sign it as, you take away my leverage. But Panthers just may be content to let him play for the 13K or a million, whatever that number is, or 14.2 or whatnot. And then hopefully wrap him up. Yeah. Then maybe in the middle of season next year, re-sign him. Long-term if they decide to do that. By then you can see what happens at the draft and kind of go from there. I see we've got a lot of people out on the line tonight. Glad to see that. Let's see, Goose Creek and whatnot, guys. We're definitely going to get to you here in a little bit. Yeah, again, more on the combine. Any movement in your board? I know you've already kind of prefaced that the combine really shouldn't result in too much movement on a board. Is there anyone for sure that you think has fallen? Out of this list you have, what do you think is the most took the biggest hit?
Let me start off with Dalvin Cook, and just simply because he's somebody who's been talked a lot on this show and written a lot by many of the CSR fans, and I for one actually don't think that his combine is going to hurt him too much. I think he's probably going to go out on his FSU pro day and have a pretty good redemption of himself. Dalvin Cook, I think the medicals with the three shoulder surgeries and maybe some questionable character, some trouble with the law is probably a bigger issue for him than a relatively non-explosive NFL combine that he had. The guy that I think may struggle, and I kind of predicted this, was Tease Tabor. Tease Tabor kind of came in his junior season as the number one corner on a lot of people's boards and pretty much stuck in the first round almost universally. Every mock draft, every big board you'd see would have Tease Tabor, the Florida corner, in the first round. And He went out and ran a 4.6240. Wasn't very good in much of the other tests, including 9 reps on the bench. So he's not that fast, and so, well, maybe you move him to nickel, maybe you move him to safety, but then he's not a real good tackler, and that's kind of the big criticism of him going into the year, is he's not really that good of a tackler either. So I think he's the one that maybe doesn't recover from this, if I had to really make a guess. Other people had a disappointing combine, including Reuben Foster getting kicked out of the combine entirely, and maybe measuring a little shorter.
That's a little that's just got to be embarrassing for him. It should be anyway. To you know, you can't even make it through the physical, you get your ass thrown out. I wrote up on him and just already when that happened.
Did you?
It's too funny though. Yeah, did a post on that last over the weekend.
I miss that.
Tez Tabor, wasn't he the one that said he was going to put on a show at the Combine?
He's a real talker. He's been saying...
Yeah, he was talking smack beforehand, saying he was going to light it up, and then he didn't. So, no Deion Sanders award for him.
I mean, going back to over the summer when he changed his name to Tez Tabor from, I don't even remember now, Jalen or something like that, he's just really a cocky guy. But, I kind of like that in a corner, though. A lot of, Deion Sanders types, a lot of corners have been pretty cocky. And so I'm not so sure that necessarily rubbed me the wrong way. But he's gotten suspended. He's had failed drugs tests. He's gotten into a fight with one of his teammates. He's definitely got some baggage there.
I bet he's not even on the Panthers board. Yeah. So you still on? A lot of people still seem to think Leonard Fournette is the pick, and if you see Dalvin Cook kind of dropping out, there's a chance Fournette goes earlier. A lot of people think the Jets might grab him at, I think, 5 or 6 or something. What then? If the top defenders are off, maybe one of those cornerbacks would be there, or the safety Hooker. Was it Lattimore, the cornerback, and Humphrey? Oh, who's the other cornerback that's been in the top 5 or 10?
Well, I mean, Sidney Jones is considered one of the better ones, and like I said, Lattimore, and then Marlon Humphrey, and
Humphrey.
Humphrey had himself a good combine. He's got some good genetics with his dad being a former NFLer, so I think that was pretty predictable that Humphrey would have had a good combine. His problem is just making plays on the ball when the ball is in the air. Of course, he's a young guy, Richard, sophomore, just like Lattimore.
Mm-hmm. As far as your list of risers, I still like that defensive end out of Villanova, whose name I still can't pronounce.
Because I haven't said it in probably 3 or 4 weeks now, I may not get it right either. But I think it's Tano Passigno. So we talked about him quite a bit. During the Senior Bowl week and leading up to the Senior Bowl week. And honestly, at that point, I wasn't a complete believer. I think I mentioned a few times that I made some comparisons to Sean Oakman, the former Baylor, just tall, 6'7", 6'8", 280-pound guy. But I didn't think he would have the redirection skills that he showed, but... he obviously we knew what he was going to measure. He ran a pretty good 40 time. But, again, it's just that 3-cone drill really measures change of directions. And he had a time that was equal to Carl Lawson, who, again, passing those 6'7" plus, 289 pounds. Carl Lawson's like 6'2", 260, I think. And then he also ran faster than Tack McKinley, who's I think in the neighborhood of 6'2" and maybe like 250 or so. So he ran a really good three cone time, and now I'm beginning to finally decide that he's that he may be worth that top 50 pick, you know, and possibly a pick at 40. Yeah, my problem with him, I guess, is all the film that you watch short of the Senior Bowl was against guys that, you know, aren't even, I'm joking, he said they won't even make the Arena Football League, but in all seriousness, most of his competition is not, not even have a chance to sniff an NFL, training camp and,
right.
Struggle to make, Canadian Football League. So it's just really hard to evaluate that kind of a tape when they're not going against, good competition.
So how does he compare then to, say, Jordan Willis, the edge rusher out of Kansas State?
Well, Willis is a much smaller guy. In fact, I'm not even so sure that Willis fits what we're looking for, maybe more of a Leo defensive end and maybe more of a 3-4 outside linebacker. But if we're willing to take a smaller guy who's got a lot of speed and athleticism, then Jordan Willis certainly looks like a guy that probably won't make it to the first round. But, I'm thinking maybe the end of the second. So, I mean, is 40 a little bit of a reach, perhaps? 72 a good spot for him, probably.
But he might be there at 72,
Yeah, Willis was actually PFF number one ranked edge rusher, just their production scores that they give them in season, and so to back that up with a good athletic testing and a pretty decent Senior Bowl, he had two sacks during the actual game, and if I remember right, I think they both were strip sacks.
Well, okay, then what about the other guy, Cassigna, whatever. I'll get it eventually, especially if we actually draft him. Versus Hassan Reddick,
the one I
was raving about.
I'm sorry, say it again?
What about what?
Oh, Reddick, sure. Yeah, I didn't include Reddick in my rises because, in my opinion, he sort of had already risen with a really strong Senior Bowl, and so many people had already had him in the first round. He doesn't really look like a potential Panther, even though I did write about him just simply because, we already have a bunch of linebackers and, three former first-round picks, and it looks like he's probably going to go well after number 8, but most likely quite a bit before number 40. So, I think he's an outstanding athlete and looks like he's going to be able to make the smooth transition from edge rusher to inside linebacker, maybe a 4-3 type of setting, but I don't really think he's going to be somebody that the Panthers would look strongly at.
All right. Well, let's see. I might bring in a caller. If I get the right tab here. See, I got old. Trusty Goose Creek. What's up, GC?
Hi, guys.
Hey, Goose.
So,
I'm one of those people that watched all of the combine, so.
Did you? All right.
Oh, yeah.
What's your thoughts?
So I guess-
Talk to me, Goose.
There's going to be a real sweet spot between 20 and 50. Everybody there is good.
Oh, yeah. 20 and 50.
It'd be nice.
That's probably.
Yeah, if we could trade back once or twice, it would be nice. Get some extra picks in there.
Well, another dream scenario. Go ahead, Durst.
Yeah, I actually just read about an hour ago. I read your comment, Jackson, about the trading down to Cleveland, and we talked about that a couple of times on air and some of our posts. Of course, Goose got in on that as well. But if we could, trade down to number 12, and maybe it's too far fetched to think that we could trade down, a second time. But certainly, if we can get down to number 12 and pick up another pick, Cleveland's Cleveland's second round pick or even a third round pick, that would be some extra ammunition for us. And my philosophy is most of the top 10 guys are kind of overrated, but then you get to 50 and these guys are underrated.
Yeah, I only, as far as what's in the top 10, I see about six guys that I would want. And so there's a good chance they could all be gone, and then we're kind of looking at the next tier in the first round and reaching for somebody, the way it appears. Again, there might be somebody there Gettleman runs to the podium for. But that safety, Jonathan Allen, I'd love to line him up at 4-3 defensive end. Across from CJ. Just not a whole lot in there outside of Myles Garrett, Jonathan Allen, Jamal Adams. I personally put A.J. Howard in that group. He'd probably be there. What else you got, Goose? Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I don't think anybody's going to try to take Howard before 8. So I'm going to look at the other teams and their needs. I'm just not so sure anybody else would take Howard earlier than 8. So I do think he'll be on the board, and maybe that's a, I don't know if you consider that a fallback option or not, but I definitely think it's somebody to consider at number 8. Of course, I've been a fan, and I know you have been as well, and he had a very nice combine. I didn't write him in my risers just because I already had him as a potential top 10 since early January.
Yeah. I mean, if you think the offense needs playmakers and blockers, he's a great, and you believe in the two tight end set, a lot of running, he's that, he's the perfect compliment to Greg Olsen, I think. So would love to see that. It's kind of where I'm at. I don't know. I'm just not on the Leonard Fournette bandwagon. And I mean, I see a lot of talent. I just don't know how long he'll last
I've talked about this before. I'm not a real Fournette fan. I'd actually rather have McCafferty, and we've talked about that.
Yeah, if he was there at 40.
Now I was thinking if he's going to be somewhere in between if we move back a little. I was thinking we could get him at 20, but I don't think he's going to fall to 20 now. You're going to have to be up there at 14 or something. But he automatically ups your return game. You can move him out of the backfield and line him up in a slot.
Yeah.
If you line him up at slot, you can do the wide receiver reverse going that way. He can run out of the backfield. And he looked really good. I mean, he blew me away.
Yeah.
He had the perfect combine for him. The only thing anybody can say against him is he wasn't very strong in the bench press. And really, as a wide receiver, Jerry Rice said he could bench press it 5 times. So,
good point.
McCaffrey's actually one of the guys that did see. I did see him during the drill part, and just really smooth-looking player in position drills.
Yeah.
He never made a hard play, even though there were some nasty throws to him and everything else. Everything he did was easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I definitely don't think he's there at 40, but I think that number 8 is a little high for him.
What about John Ross? Has he moved into the top 10?
Not for me.
Yeah, not for me either. I mean, even kind of excluding the medicals, he's a small frame guy that you know, that's kind of what Ginn was, you know, however many years ago, was like, a, I think he's a night pick, and, for, you know, from Miami a decade or so ago, it's been just a thin-framed speed guy, and, you know, these guys, I don't know, you know, it just goes a little bit high for him.
Yeah. I think a lot of what we do is, like I said today, when they were talking about Gettleman go ahead and putting people under contract, is where we are by the end of free agency. Because it looks like Gettleman's going down the line, marking off boxes, trying to set up everything where he doesn't have to pick anybody in particular.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I'm looking for him to pick up a offensive tackle or two in free agency. That's where I'm looking at him to go next.
I think that's
it's more
where,
available.
I think Gettleman's going to make a splash this year. He's got the cash to do it, and he's going to have to make a play for one of these top tackles. Either one, obviously a left tackle, the Whitworth, Matt Khalil, Ricky Wagner maybe on the right side, or you could draft a Cam Robinson to play right tackle. I don't know. He's got to fix the tackle situation.
He's going to have to do something at free agency at tackle, and I saw somewhere, I think it was on CSR, that he was looking at bringing in Church as a strong safety from Dallas, and I would like that.
He's a good player.
He'd be solid.
Where'd you see that at?
I think it was in CSR.
Okay.
It might have been on NFL.com or something, but anyway, yeah. Panthers were said to be making an effort to talk to him anyway.
All right. Yeah, still got some people online. I appreciate you guys' patience. I'll get around to all of you here shortly. No real chat room anymore, but if you have any questions, I'm perusing the Cat Scratch Radio thread now for questions. And actually, I see some.
Tell you what, a couple of players that stood out to me in the Combine, too, was some of the defensive edge guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, really.
I thought he showed well. I'd seen some film on him and all, but I couldn't get enough film to really look at him strongly. But he looked really good in the drills.
What was that name again?
Basham from Ohio.
Basham. Ah, okay.
And he had a pretty good Senior Bowl, too, or was he the Shrine Game? I think he was a Senior Bowl standout, right?
He was at Shrine Game. No, Senior Bowl. He was in Senior Bowl. Him and the other guy that I wasn't expecting to do as well as he did was the Hendrickson. From Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
He had a really good time.
Yeah, he was the top guy, or one of the top two, three guys in the Shrine Game.
All right, I'm trying to get
my low key pick that I thought we might get back at, the third round. And now we may go into the round as the other cornerback from Ohio State.
Yeah, Connolly.
What's his name?
Gadeon Connolly.
Ah, okay, that's right.
He looked really good in the drill.
I added Brian to the line. Didn't realize you're out there, Brian. I didn't hear from you. Thanks for joining
us,
though.
That's okay. Hey, no problem. Yeah, I didn't realize we were doing it until mad late, so I was like 2 minutes before you set it up. I was like, hey, I'm here.
No problem. No problem. So, do you got any comments on the free agency or the combine?
Well, obviously, I'm going to talk about Brenton Burse and the fact that we added your boy back, you know.
I knew that'd make you happy.
That was definitely one of the best parts of last season, despite the fact that it was so terrible, was me and Eric's little CSR feud about Bird and Burson, and we'll definitely keep that going as long as they're both on the roster. That said, I know a lot of Panthers fans really didn't like that Johnson was added back for $9.5 million over 2 years, but I really think it was a good move. I mean, even if they don't find anybody that they can add who can start right away, I mean, Addison and Ely were both a lot better, like, splitting snaps last season instead of fighting for snaps over each side. Like, them alternating was definitely good for both of them. So,
yeah,
for the most part, I like what Carolina's done so far, like adding back in the guys that they really want. I wouldn't be surprised if Ted Ginn comes back, but I think what Gettleman's doing right now is essentially putting him in a position where he doesn't have to take a pass rusher with his first pick. So, yeah.
And, of course, Johnson says he's going to bring Captain Munnerlin and Julius Peppers back home. You guys, would those be good moves? You guys feeling that?
I wouldn't mind seeing Peppers back.
Yeah, he'd have to be pretty damn expensive, I would think.
I wouldn't pay much for him because he'd be a down rush guy.
I think if Peppers comes back, it would be for the simple idea of playing for Carolina for his last season. So I don't know if he would be that expensive because he already got his paydays.
Yeah, that's true.
That said, if they can bring Peppers back, that would be a situation where you got Addison and Ely on one end essentially doing a timeshare, and you got Johnson and Peppers on another end essentially doing a timeshare, and then you don't have to take a pass rusher high this season. So I think if they can bring Peppers back, even if they got to pay him like $3 to $4 million this season, that's a good move. Because it's definitely going to be a one-year deal. It's not going to be a multi-year deal. And then Munnerlin, obviously, is the best nickel we've had for God knows how long. So, and he played well in Minnesota. So you bring him in, then you got Daryl Worley and James Bradbury are the two guys that would be considered the weak links compared to him. And they've proven, in my opinion, that they're just fine on their own. So I think if you bring both those guys back, you don't have to address your defense much aside from adding high-impact players in the draft.
Yeah. Peppers made
not really worried
on his three-year deal in Green Bay. He averaged $8.6 million.
I'm not so worried about the nickel. I'd almost say draft a cornerback. Be a lot cheaper with so many good ones in the draft this year. You can get one later.
Well, the only thing I have to say about that is Carolina's nickel position is definitely very difficult to play because they ask a lot of that person. That's why they were using Leonard Johnson, Robert McClain, and Shaq Thompson essentially in different roles but in the same base defense. So Munnerlin was able to do a lot of things they wanted him to do. He was a good blitzer. He was a good pass coverage defender. He was a decent run defense defender when he was with Carolina. Especially that last year he was with Carolina, he was a really good player in the nickel. So I think you bring him back in, you don't have to, like, do the whole rotation, throw somebody in there who does one thing well, throw somebody in who does another thing well. I think that the only reason you'd take Munnerlin out of the nickel is if you want Shaq Thompson in there for the run defense capability. So I think that Munnerlin would be a great addition if they can bring him back.
Well, you know, I have
to
give Durst
too.
That too, because he said all along that somebody like Buda Baker would be great for Panthers as a nickel, and he would fit something like that. But he'll be gone before 40, I believe.
And I don't.
The only thing that'll hold him back is his size. If he makes it to 40, it's going to be because of his size.
I don't disagree with adding a nickel in the draft for sure. I don't think that Gettleman's going to throw like a 4-year deal at someone like Captain Munnerlyn. I think that adding a nickel certainly makes sense, even if they get somebody this year who could theoretically play nickel. It's just that it's such a hard position to play in Carolina. So, and it's very important because we play more nickel about 75% of the time. So I think that even if you do draft a corner who you could theoretically play nickel in the future, you may not want to throw him into the fire right away, especially if you're trying to be successful this year.
Yeah, it could be like your fourth corner. Yeah, you could have a rookie basically being your fourth corner this year, and then, you know, moving forward, who knows what happens.
And, hey, you got him there for injury, too, which we all know that Carolina is good for at least one injured corner every year.
Turf toe central.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. Got a couple other fellas out here that have been waiting. Here's old Catastrophe. What's up, Cat?
Gentlemen, what's going on, guys?
Hey, hey.
Good evening.
You a combine watcher?
I watched a little bit on Saturday, and I saw, you know, a few highlights over the weekend. There's some guys that were pretty impressive and some that, you know, probably just a little bit average, I think.
Yeah. Saturday, I didn't see any of the tight ends, but they keep saying it's a deep class. And I know Durst is, he highlighted, what, Bucky Hodges, who, damn, he is tall and fast. And I know he played well last year. Where do you see Hodges going? Did you see any tight ends, Kat?
I didn't. That was one of the groups, them and the offensive linemen I didn't see. And I think they did their combine on the same day, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Running backs and offensive linemen were Friday, and then tight ends and wide receivers were on the Saturday group.
Oh, that's right. It was Friday,
okay.
And Saturday. Yeah.
Well, there was one running back that I was looking at. I thought he was pretty fluid. Was that D'Angelo Henderson kid out of Coastal Carolina? Never even heard of the guy. And I was just watching him, and looked like he caught the ball pretty well. Pretty fluid. I don't know anything about him, though. I was kind of leave that up to you guys and see if y'all knew anything about him.
I've actually seen him times. And he's a pretty good ball player, but if you check out when you look at him, I was looking into him, and he fumbles a lot.
Oh, he'll fit right in then, is what you're saying.
that's one of my pet peeves, you know, that somebody that fumbles near your end zone is killing you, you know. I don't like somebody with bad security. So I wouldn't take him.
Well, we know that Carolina has been pretty successful in the last few years with guys from Coastal Carolina. Obviously, we didn't throw any draft capital at Mike Tolbert, but Josh Norman worked out quite well as well. So maybe we just get the golden touch there.
I'm tongue in cheek here. All right.
Talking about the tight ends, I thought I had one of them that I fell off the board, and that was Gerald Everett.
He didn't do well for
a pick, and after watching him go through the drills, I really didn't like him. You know, his measurables were all right, but he looked terrible in the drills.
Yep.
He's got really small hands. I remember that from the Senior Bowl week that they were talking about. You know, that he's a small dude and small hands, and you know, I'm
he
not
was
sure
double clutching everything. And caught it.
Yeah. And it's such a deep class, you know, that the guys like Jordan Leggett or Gerald Everett that didn't necessarily have a bad combine, but and you have so many guys that are considered risers or somebody, you know, some, you know, the guys that actually shined in Senior Bowl and NFL Combine, it's going to be, you're not going to have 20, you know, tight ends taken in the first three rounds.
Yeah, it'll definitely.
Why didn't Leggett do anything in the drills? Is he hurt or is he just waiting for his pro day? I mean, his day at Clemson.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's the, you know, the latter, that he made. You know, a lot of people make the decision to wait until their pro day. And
I've seen some that are saying they're not going to do it at all. Run a 40. Who was it? Was it Mike Williams?
Well, I know John Ross isn't running a 40 after the combine.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame him for that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's see. We got CP on the line. CP21.
There he is.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up?
What's up?
Hey.
I didn't watch that much of the draft, but I did watch the safety from Connecticut, and that kid is a freak. I think he was like...
Which guy?
Four.
What's his name?
The safety.
Melon.
I can't pronounce his name. Yeah, how do you say his name? I can't say his name, but it's
O.B. Miller.
I was really impressed with his combine. I don't think he'll be there with the second pick, but I wouldn't be mad if we took him. I see him as that Chan Townsend type of player, that hard-hitting safety that we need. He had decent speed. He has length, especially because, you know, we
he's
do
not
like
a hard hitter.
A
We've talked about this, Durst and I. He's not a hard hitter.
How is he in coverage? That's I guess, my main concern. Because, you know, we like to play a lot of that high safety look.
I mean, I think he's just considered sort of a raw athlete right now. He's probably one of the top three or four athletes in this draft. But he's, you know, coming out of Connecticut, I mean, I know there's been a couple of defensive backs that have come out of there, both corners and safeties, the last few years. They've turned into pretty good NFL players. But I definitely think this guy's a little bit raw. Probably take a year or so to develop. But yeah, I think he'd be a great fit in the Panthers. At this point, I don't think he's going to be there at 40. You know, there seem to be a few guys, you know, between Peppers, Buda Baker, Mel Fonbu, that I was like, well, one of them's got to last a 40. But now... It's hard to tell. It's hard to identify which one.
It really depends
on
how many quarterbacks
sure.
And. Oh, I was just gonna say it really depends on how many quarterbacks and running backs are selected prior to that pick, because there could be a few who go earlier than they should.
And I was going to say, I think a lot of those, well, at least two of them for sure, the UConn guys can, you know, pretty much broad jump the length of the field.
That's right. It was Byron Jones that set the record, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
He set the Olympic record, didn't he?
World record.
World record, yeah.
They probably trained with basketball team.
I think Melon Fonbu now actually has the second best broad jump in like combine history after Byron Jones.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see us trading up for him. It wouldn't surprise me.
So is there a consensus on how many picks we have? I mean, I've heard 8 and I've heard 9. Does anybody know for sure how many picks we have?
I think we have 8, but I could be wrong.
Only one comp, right?
Right.
Yeah, we got a comp.
like 99 or 98, something like that.
98.
And we lost a seventh round pick, but we picked one up. So we lost our
rounds, right?
So if we lost anywhere else, I don't.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, we gained one from the Browns this year, and I think we'll lose one in 2018. But Kevin Norwood, I think that conditional pick, he was supposed to stick on the roster for 2 years. So a lot of people were thinking we were going to lose a seventh-round pick for him since we cut him after he got hurt. And we actually get to keep that pick. So, again, I've seen eight and I've seen nine. I really don't know.
I hadn't even looked into it. I know there's a couple of teams that sacrificed a pick for disciplinary action. And I can't even remember where those are. Didn't somebody lose a fourth-round pick or something? Patriots? Didn't they lose a pick?
The Seahawks lost a pick too, didn't they?
Yep. They deserve to, though. They've been habitual about practicing too hard or whatever it is, too much contact and stuff like that. They've done that, 2 years in a row, so they deserve to lose a pick. I can't remember what it was. Fourth sounds about right, but.
Yeah. Well, is this the year that Kansas City had a tampering for Macklin? Like they got penalized for tampering with when the Macklin signing?
Yeah, they did.
I'm thinking about it right now, and I think the Patriots lost the pick for Deflategate a later one this year, but I think they got it back, didn't they? Didn't the commissioner give it back to them?
You might be correct.
Trying to placate Robert Kraft. They still lost the first round one the year before.
So who's the first free agent you guys hope we sign?
An offensive tackle. Whoever they think is best. Okung, I don't know. Khalil.
I'm with you. Well, I don't know who will best fit this system. I hear everyone keep talking about Khalil, but I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't even happen.
Is Luke Jokel that bad?
Got big Parm entities on the line now. Welcome, Parm.
The only person I want in this draft is Malik Hooker because I think that Malik Hooker will make our secondary actually awesome. And that's all I really need to say.
Okay, good night. Come back later.
Yeah,
if we had a free safety like Malik Hooker, who's going to suck in the first year? He's not going to be good in the first year, but by the second year, teach him how to tackle, and all of a sudden we have an all pro safety that can sit there and pick off, and that teams don't want to throw at in any way, shape, or form. It becomes amazing. I want Malik Hooker. This needs to happen.
Maybe we can get him in the second round, but I sincerely doubt it.
Yeah, if he's in the second,
he's
going to
be a turnover machine, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is he can't tackle worth a crap. He can cover, but he can't tackle, so...
I'm trying to look him up right now because I remember he had such huge hands it caught my attention.
Let's see if I can find it.
like 10 and a half or something.
11.
Ooh.
No. Let me see. 10-6. So that's 10 and 3 quarters inch.
Yeah, he can catch the ball, and he's fast. Not combine fast, but he's playing speed fast.
Yeah, I think he's one of those that's not going to get to work out at all before the draft, and so it does take a little bit of a big film study and a little bit of a leap of faith.
And teach him how to tackle. Get Luke Kuechly on him to teach him how to tackle. Because, dear God, looking at his tape, he can't tackle. He can tackle. He just doesn't know how to, like, come at the player with a good angle. So he can't tackle.
He almost does like himself sometimes.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, you know, Hooker was very late to football. He was a high school basketball star that I think only played like one or two seasons of high school football. And then, of course, he came out as a redshirt sophomore, and he was stuck behind two NFL guys last year, you know, 2015, I mean. So he really only played like 1 year of high school and 1 year of college. So there's definitely some teaching to be done there, but I agree that year one he may kind of suck a little bit, and year two, or hopefully maybe to the back end of his rookie year, he'll end up being really good.
Yeah, so if we could, I mean, I don't know what his grade is, but I mean, if we could pick him up in the second or third round, that would be, I think, an amazing steal of the draft.
He was on somebody's top 100 as the number two player.
Yeah.
I think he's not the number two safety. He doesn't know how to tackle. But
he was the number two prospect overall on one of the boards.
I think if Daniel Jeremiah maybe had him that high at one point, like his first 50 big board or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
wouldn't he be kind of redundant to like what Coleman would be? I mean, I feel like Coleman would be better as a free safety than he would a strong safety.
I think of Coleman, but you know,
I mean, then you're, originally, but, I mean, I, go ahead.
I was going to say, originally I was all over Leonard Fournette about 5-6 weeks ago, and then slowly but surely I've gone just straight Adams. I would almost do anything to get him. So I do feel like Hooker would definitely have more interceptions. I mean, he's going to have more productivity, but if you're talking about just consistency, I think Adams is where it's at. I don't think he gets past Tennessee, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm just thinking like, all right, we got one corner that looks like he's figured it out. We got another corner who's a little behind, and then we still got to figure out I'm thinking Hooker as a pure cover safety who can sit there and play midfield, and I mean, we basically play a cover three, cover one system, and you need somebody who can sit there and run around the field. We don't have a problem with linebackers, but I mean that just makes our pass defense on the back end so much better, and gives the time for coverage sacks.
Would you feel
but
confident
like
leaving
said,
Coleman at strong safety?
He's adequate at strong safety. I think we'd have to. I mean, if we really want a strong safety, we need that kid from LSU.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, like, I mean, Coleman's okay at free safety. I mean, yeah, he had a bunch of picks, but, I mean, that had a lot to do with the fact that we had, you know, a lot, the front was doing a lot of the work. I mean, I'm thinking of the theory that we could sit there and have a coverage guy that quarterbacks don't want to throw around, that all of a sudden gives the defensive line a lot more time to get to the quarterback. And Coleman doesn't do that. And I think you could train Malik Hooker up in a year or so to be that guy.
Funny, because I think Coleman's actually more effective as a free safety than a strong safety.
Yeah, I mean, this would basically take Coleman out of the picture. I think Coleman's okay. And, I mean, yes, with the drafting philosophy and the philosophy of the Gettleman, it's unlikely it would happen, but looking at some of this kid's tape, I mean, he is just the way he can run to the numbers from the center field and pick off the ball. That's something.
Yeah. I think Hooker's a little bit more rare. I think his skill set's a little bit more rare than Adams. But I think we've kind of said this before. Hooker probably has a higher ceiling while Adams has a higher floor. You know, Adams, you kind of know what you're going to get. You're going to get a very strong tackler, more of an in-the-box presence. Probably a Pro Bowler. But Hooker definitely has the chance to be something a little bit more rare, one of those, you know, maybe 6 to 8 interceptions a year kind of guys.
Yeah, and consistent at that. I mean, this is my idea, is that we're basically running a system, a cover system, that if you've got somebody that can do that, that can run and go and shadow number one receivers very easily, figure out, especially if you're running a system where you got to read the eyes of the quarterback, which he does really well, and goes toward where the quarterback is throwing. It just makes it so much more fun. But on the other hand, I don't think Leonard Fournette fits our system functionally. I also don't think he's going to get past Jacksonville, so I don't think that's actually an option for us. I mean, Jacksonville's going to pick up Fournette. is the way I'm looking at it.
And just to touch on the Fournette fit. You know, in Carolina, you know, there's two schools of thought. One is we like to run a power running game, and Fournette's nothing but power. The other school of thought is that Fournette in college, at least his last year, he played about 85% of his snaps with the quarterback under center. That's very different than the way Carolina plays, where we play the majority of our snaps or almost exclusively have a shotgun.
Yeah. But I mean, but let's be honest. I mean, do you really think Jacksonville's gonna not take Fournette? They need somebody to take the pressure off their retarded QB.
Hey, we got John on the line too. But yeah, keep that.
You know, they also need pass rush. Taking pressure off your quarterback and offensive line.
Well, that's also true, and I imagine that we're gonna start picking up offensive linemen like they're candy. In free agency.
Yeah, and let's not let that take away from the fact the Falcons blew a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We'll have to make sure we put that in every show going forward.
Yeah. And had they run the ball three times, had they kneeled three times and kicked a field goal, they would have won that game.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do shit. They just had to kneel down and kick a field goal. And they would have won the game. And let's also note that the Patriots never led that game. At any point at no point in that game did the Patriots lead the game. No point. They had 0 seconds of leading in that game and still won it.
Oh, yeah, I'll keep it going. I derailed us there for a minute.
But, yeah, that's really all I had is that I want Malik Hooker in some way, shape, or form. Other than that, I have no idea about anything.
Well, I don't want Fournette. I don't like him. I don't know why, but I really don't like him. I don't trust his body's going to hold up. He's always having injuries. We've got that on our roster right now for another 2 years, and Stewart, who is the same type of player. And I'd just soon, if we're going to go for a power back, wait till next year when there's four or five of them coming out, then they'd be with Stewart for a year, and then you let done with it.
I agree with you now. 5 or 6 weeks ago, like I said, I mean, I was all about Fournette, but just something don't feel right about him right now. And it's not the combine. I mean.
Well, the biggest thing that Stewart does is pass protect. I mean,
yep.
Does Fournette pass protect particularly well?
No.
He wasn't asked too much at LSU. Yeah, they don't pass the ball much.
Well, they didn't have a quarterback, so. I mean, they had a guy
in
the position of quarterback.
They had a fullback to be in on passing downs.
So obviously he had problems with pass protection. I mean, the entire reason our offense collapses when Stewart's not in it is because Stewart is an amazing pass protector. And so when he wasn't in for three games, it was because his pass protection wasn't there. And our offensive line was a complete and utter disaster most of the year. And there aren't any tackles in the draft, so we got to pick up one or two in free agency. Because who knows whether Orr's ever going to come back. And then I think we're picking defense in the first round. Either a safety or a defensive end. Because I don't see any of the tight ends as being first round draft picks at 8. I mean, unless we trade back, but I don't see any tight ends that I want to pick at 8.
Not to detract too far from your point, but yeah, I agree. I don't think that there's an offensive tackle worth the 8th pick right now, aside from maybe Cam Robinson. I know Canadian Panthers are really hammering the table for him. But in free agency, my wish list consists of one offensive tackle that you can trust for your left tackle position. And this is in the scenario where Orr doesn't come back. and a right tackle slash swing tackle. Because we're going to lose our swing tackle in Mike Remmers. As much as people hate him, he can play left tackle and right tackle. That's something that's very rare in the NFL. I don't know how many of you guys saw my free agency post from earlier today. My wish list was Matt Khalil and Riley Reiff. And I think that of those two, that Reiff is the best, is the guy that Carolina should absolutely pursue because he played left tackle and right tackle. And if Carolina can get him and somebody else in free agency, they'll be okay at tackle, I think. And then they can draft the way they want to.
Would you be against signing Remmers to some sort of like a 3-year contract or something like that?
I think if you get Remmers and you also sign somebody, like the caveat to that is that I think they need to sign somebody else too. Simply because Ower is such an uncertainty right now. And whether it's...
Yeah,
what,
I would assume he's gone.
I would be absolutely fine with Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers signing contracts. And then, theoretically, if Ower doesn't come back, you got Reiff on the left tackle side and Remmers on the right tackle side. Not the best situation, but at least it's passable. Because Reiff had done the same thing in Detroit. So... you get Reiff and you get Remmers. You have two guys who can both play both positions. So you put them at whichever position works best for them, and there you go.
Yeah.
I think that Carolina will heavily pursue Reiff just because of his versatility. Because as we know, Dave Gettleman loves versatility. I don't know if Remmers is going to come back simply because I think that there's going to be one team out there that's going to look at him and say, you know what, we'll pay him to be our starting right tackle, knowing that he has the versatility to play left tackle in a pinch, and I think they'll pay more than Carolina will. But I think that Reiff might get enough money from Carolina because we know he will be at least a passable starter at either position. So I think it'll be Reiff and somebody else who's kind of an uncertainty, maybe.
Al, if we can rehabilitate Khalil and take Reiff, because Khalil's going to come at a very small price because he's sucked for so long, primarily through injuries. And then he's got his brother here, which I don't think will make him better, but I think it might make him more interested in actually signing.
I think that may bring his price down slightly, just the fact that he could play with his brother. That said, what you have to consider is not necessarily the talent level of the offensive tackle, but the way the market's going to go. Because the NFL right now, there is an absolute dearth of talent in offensive line around the league. So, what's that?
I was saying, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. I thought you said no. And I was like, what? Yeah. No, there's a real dearth of talent in the NFL at offensive line, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that when kids are in college, if they're athletic enough, they go to the defensive line because that's where you make your money. So even if a guy's not getting – even if a guy's not worth the contract that he's going to get, there will be some team that will pay him that money, as sad as it is, because it's better than not having any option whatsoever, which we ran into last year with Carolina when – Mike Remmers was literally the best and only option to play left tackle. So I think that Carolina's going to have to shell out some money for Matt Khalil, even if he's not worth that.
Yeah, but I think we can get him for well under tackle prices because, I mean, he has not been good for the last couple of years.
No.
Primarily because of injuries. So I don't think there's going to be, Russell Okung is going to get a big contract. Matt Khalil is going to be looking at much, much smaller prospects because nobody knows what they're going to get with him. You know, he comes out and says, "Oh, I'm healthy." All right. Well, you're healthy. How much of you sucking had to do with you not being healthy, and how much of it had to do with you not being any good at it?
I think that Khalil is going to warrant a one-year prove-it deal, and I think that's where Carolina is going to cash in. Because I think it was the same thing with Oer. Like, he was injured too. Carolina brought him in. He just so happened to be healthy the 1 year and played pretty well. I think that Khalil is gonna warrant a 1 year prove it deal or a several year just below starter average for the market deal, and I don't think Dave Gettleman's gonna commit to something like that. So I think
you could see
a 1 year like
3 year heavy incentive contract with opt outs after the first year.
Like what Kelvin Beachum got. Yeah, that's possible. I don't know if Khalil will go for that, especially after what happened to Beachum when he did sign that deal. So, you know,
Beachum set up that contract for himself. That was a stupid one. No, I mean, I'm not saying the team won't have some penalties if we let him go. So there's some disincentive. But Beachum's contract.
I just think we're going to get to a point where the offensive tackles have more leverage than the teams do because of that. I think that said, that I think if Khalil does come in, we're going to see a one-year deal where a lot of people are going to be like, oh, they paid him way too much money. But the people who are, I'll say intelligent, will say, okay, but it's only a one-year deal.
Yeah.
I think people are going to look at the contract and say they overpaid him, but they'll also say, but then there will be people who say, but it's only a 1 year deal. That's fine.
I'd say, but looking at the deals, I think they're going to sign him to it. If they sign him, they'll sign him to a 2 or 3 year incentive laden contract, low guaranteed but high incentive, with easy opt out after 2 years probably.
The only issue I see with that scenario, and obviously that's very team-friendly, is what is Minnesota going to offer him?
Nothing.
Because Carolina is going to have to – well, no, because Minnesota apparently has some interest in bringing him back. So Carolina needs to offer something better than whatever Minnesota might offer him.
Okay. I thought Minnesota was cutting bait on that one.
Nah, they've been in talks. I don't – it's not, like, anything concrete. Like, they're definitely going to bring him back or anything, but they're at least in talks, which is smart. I mean, I think Carolina should be in talks with Mike Remmers, too. So, you know, it's not necessarily
I definitely think we should bring Mike Remmers back. I think for all the hate he gets, he's probably the best backup tackle in the league. And that's
and
why
didn't he play some center, too?
Huh? I did it in my free agent post. Remmers can play right tackle, left tackle, and center. He was the primary backup to Khalil. I believe it was last season. He was considered the primary backup to Khalil. So even though he's not like your Pro Bowl level or even like top 15 offensive tackle, he provides value in the sense that if somebody goes down, you can count on him to step in. So I think that's where he's going to get his money at.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see him at somewhere $5 to $7 million contract on some team just because of his versatility and his ability to play three spots on the line. I mean, if Remmers was like Britton Burson and he just popped in every once in a while when somebody was injured, we would all love him. The fact that he's had to start is why we all hate him.
He should have never been in that position to begin with, honestly.
Yeah, we should have had a surfeit of tackle talent, but we apparently have been unable to gain that because the only time we've picked high in the draft has been when there's no tackle talent.
Is Jokel worth bringing in? I mean, I don't even know if he's been released yet or not, but I was under the impression that he was going to be released.
He's
I mean, is he worth
in
bringing
agency.
In? Okay. Is he worth looking at, you think?
I think he is, but I think he's one of those guys where pretty much any team is going to look at him and say, you know what, we'll sign him for a year and see what he does. I don't even think he has an incentive laden contract like what they're like what you're describing for Khalil, because he literally hasn't proven shit since being in the NFL. Where at least Khalil is going to be a semi competent starter at times. I think that Jokel is the guy where he's going to require a 1 year deal, which is like mostly guaranteed but also very low. And you see where you get with him. I think he's going to get something similar to what Oer got his first year with Carolina.
And it couldn't be a vet minimum because he hadn't even been there long enough, right? Don't you have to be there a certain amount of years to get the vet minimum?
Well, he was a first-round pick, and I think that they didn't even take his first-round
a fifth-year option.
Yeah. So he's
as many tackles as theoretically possible and see what we get out of it.
Hell, I wouldn't be surprised to see Gettleman sign three tackles in free agency who all could theoretically start, depending on the contracts. Like, it would not surprise me to see, like, Beecham, Jokel, and Khalil. That said, I feel like at least one of those guys is going to have another team who's enamored with them and is going to sign them to an actual long-term deal, despite how stupid that may be.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like a lot of our players are pushing for Okun.
Aside from Ryan Khalil, but yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Ryan Khalil with the emphatic, I haven't been.
Yeah.
Well, hell, I mean, if we could sign Okun for a good contract and then grab Khalil and Jokel for cheap prove-it contracts, I mean, one of our problems last year is we just didn't have any depth. I mean, I don't know who has enough depth to deal with what we dealt with last year, but...
Now, the one caveat I have there is simple. How many of those guys are going to sign on thinking that they may or may not have a starting position? Because there's going to be a team out there that's going to offer them a job and say, hey, you're our starter if you stay healthy. You know? Like... What you're saying ideally makes sense, especially for those guys, because they can sign on with a team that was in the Super Bowl not even two years ago, and they know that they have the pieces there. But at the same time, like, this is free agency. This is where you make your money, you know? You don't want to make money as a backup and that when you can be paid a starter, even if you're not worthy of that.
Yeah,
you know?
but one-year deals, two-year deals allow you the flexibility that basically says you're going to prove it. And also, you know, you're walking into a situation, a locker room, where everybody said it's going to be fun. So, I mean, yeah, money's money. But if you're sitting there and you've not sniffed being good, like Jokel, and you saw Orr, who has been underperforming for years and then sucked and then came in and was I wouldn't say Orr was good. I mean, we were running seven-man max protect systems in 2015.
I think Orr was absolutely fine in 2015. I think that people look at the Super Bowl and say, well, he wasn't that good, but I think Oer did absolutely fine in 2015. And if he can come back, I think he should be the starting left tackle.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, I would say I would love him as starting right tackle.
No, I meant left tackle. Like, that's where we saw him succeed, aside from going up against Von Miller on a field where he was literally on skates at times in the Super Bowl. But
oh, yeah, no.
That's what I was
going to
say.
Super Bowl. I'm talking about the scheme that we ran all through 2015, which was a max protect scheme on every passing down. We literally kept
in. Are you talking about last season or are you talking about the season before that?
The season before that. We had tight ends blocking or chipping. We kept in a running back, and we had two receivers running routes. We were running max protect on every single passing down. And that's what killed us in the Super Bowl, because the Broncos ran green dog blitzes on everybody who wasn't running routes. So you had a coverage man who was covering a tight end, looked, saw the tight end wasn't going to run a route, blitzed. That's why I always say that our tackles were getting enormous amounts of help in 2015.
They were getting help at times, but Greg Olsen's not reaching 1,000 yards receiving if they're literally running two people on routes all the time. No,
he was chipping all the time. I'm not saying he was staying in the block.
But chipping is normal in an NFL offense, though. Like, that's not something that
you do out of
desperation.
But then we were keeping the second tight end in to help protect. No, we were running very heavy protection schemes all throughout 2015. If you go back and look at the tape, you realize you're only seeing two to three wide receivers running at any. I mean, the running back was rarely running out into the flat. They were staying in to protect. I'm just saying, like, our tackles were not good in 2015. They were getting protected. And it wasn't until the Broncos showed the weakness of that system that we tried to go away from it, and then our entire offensive line got injured, and so that I don't even know how to assess last year.
I see what you're getting at, but at the same time, in 2015, Carolina was very run-heavy and play-action-heavy, and even if it wasn't play-action, it was out of, like, sets they could run out of. So... And you're not wrong in the sense – I'm not saying you're wrong by any means. I just kind of – I don't think that it's as big of a deal as you're making it, because I think that they were running a lot of plays out of running sets where they had the guys blocking instead of doing whatever, because it forced the defense to play the run at the same time too.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no. I mean, that
offense so successful was the fact that teams didn't know whether they were running or passing, or if Cam Newton was running out of it. So
yeah, but at the
I don't disagree though, because Remmers,
you're not going to run the type of max protect systems they were running. You don't run if you have a 5-person line that can protect. You don't run 7-man protects. Even on running plays, because you can run it the opposite way, which says we're going to pass the ball. But, oh, wait, we're running it. If you've got an offensive line that can block with 5 men. And we just didn't have that.
Well, I said this
but
last
you,
year.
You can't. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I said last year that the fact that Stewart got hurt so early in the Super Bowl, like, they knew we weren't going to run the ball. I mean, he might as well just took a hand off and got on his crutches. I mean, really. So, I mean, that's why they started running those green dog blitzes. I mean, that's really what happened.
The other thing, too, is that teams run their defenses a lot differently than they would when Cam Newton's on the field. And, while I get what you're saying conceptually with the 5-man protect and the 5-man rushing plays, you have to, no matter who your quarterback is, no matter who your running back is, you have to account for it if you read that there's going to be 6 or 7 guys coming. And a lot of times that, like, I know in 2015, like, after watching, that teams wanted to get after Cam Newton. They just couldn't do it successfully, where Denver did. And then in 2016, a lot of teams did, because there were so many problems with the offensive line and injuries and whatnot. So I get where you're coming from, for sure. I'm just saying, I think that you bring Ower back to where he was, and if he's not in the concussion protocol for another 15 months, that you find the right tackle who's at least passable, you know, you get back to having an offensive line that can protect Cam. Because it worked.
Oh yeah, I mean, the problem last year
guys.
That we ran through.
We are at the end of our recording. Quick 90 minutes. Appreciate everybody that dialed in. Goose Creek, Brian, Durst, appreciate your contributions, and we'll do it again next week. Y'all have a good night.